It's like I'm having the most beautiful dream and the most terrible nightmare all at once.
Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waro Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you could support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaroiDesho or email us at WaroiDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. All right, so I've clicked start streaming.
Go to the YouTube channel and check. Well,
I'm already there. Have faith. Okay.
Whoa. Where did that voice come from? I didn't mean to do that. Alec Baldwin is joining the podcast. Hello, it's Alec Baldwin. 30 years acting experience. Shadon.
Yeah, we're good.
Shadon. I was on my way to the airport, and I thought, I have to be on this podcast, because I love anime. Me, Alec Baldwin.
Well,
what have you to say to that?
Thank you very much. Thank you, Alec Baldwin. I don't really have much else I can say to that. Thank you for, you know, tuning into this podcast at this early stage.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know what? No, take that back. God bless you. You know, you're blessed. I'm blessing this podcast with my wonderful presence. Now, I only have one more thing to say, and that is, fuck ArenaNet. Bruce, hit my music.
Well, it's only appropriate this is going to be a foul on. Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and MPs. Welcome to Streamer 4 Season 3, The Third Strike.
Tres!
And we are, and we are once again to talk about... Oh, God. We're here once again to talk about Banana Fish. And joining me in the digital studio today, halfway across the world, it is, of course, my stalwart companion, friend, and... occasional, you know, figure maker, figure troublemaker, you know, with all of his stuff that he's got in his office. The Soul Doxer.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, and tally me banana.
Yes. That's all I've... Oh,
correct response is Deo, I think.
Deo. Well, I do have a question for you, Dog. Which one of us is going to be the first ones to actually eat a banana on stream for this particular one?
Oh, that's such a good idea. How did they not think of this? Oh.
Look, I think what we really need to do is just, like, you know, we need to both eat a banana simultaneously and just have people rate on how sleazy it looks. Make a competition out of it just for shits and giggles.
Absolutely. That should be a thing. Are we rolling? Does everything with the stream look good? Let us know if you're having problems.
Unless it's about my hair, in which case I can't help it. It's genetic. Please leave me be.
That's a party foul. No, no ribbing on the hair. So, right. Banana Fish episode 2, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Or holy shit. Yeah. Or B-Fish, as I've been, you know, naming it when I name files on my computer.
I have to say, I misheard you say that as B-Fish. That's a different show entirely.
That's the doujin I'm going to make after this goes off the air.
Is that the pro wrestling, you know, equivalent of the crime element in this, you know? You know, it's illegal drugs going around, there's gay sex, and then it's just, instead of crime, it's pro wrestling. You have an American wrestler, the Japanese wrestler. Japanese wrestler's new in town, bit shy. American pro wrestler, you know, he's the big fucking cheat. See, this shit writes itself.
This is my goal.
It's already written immediately. I'm just fine replacing, yes, you know, crime with wrestling.
This is my golden lover, Sojin. For sure.
Oh, show. So, let's talk about Banana Fish episode 2. Doc, take it away with who actually brought us this week's episode.
Well, I have some bad news, sir.
Oh, great.
And that bad...
Do you have any good news to go with this?
Well,
bad news or not?
Okay. So, I'm going to have to, like, rely on the chat for this one. Because the sources that I used to get the information for Darley Fra and MMO Junkie, they're not posting the Banana Fish information. And I was just looking on super basic boys. So, looking on like Wikipedia and my anime list and Anime News Network, cobbling things together that way. And none of them are listing, like, episode directors or main writers. You know, I just know Hiroshi Seko, right, is the writer. But other than that, I mean, the people we talked about last time are all I know. I don't have any new information. Mm-hmm. So, like, I know that when we recorded Frank's, it was a few days after. And also, like, I don't know, maybe some people will get into a rhythm with it when they start regularly covering it. I mean, it's... Seasons just starting up, like some people are covering a lot of things or haven't narrowed down what they're going to cover, so hopefully like that information will become more common and start popping up. If not, like, again, if anybody knows a place where I can find that stuff, let me know and I'd love to mention it.
Sure. I do have to say though, when you said to your usual contacts, I thought you meant like trench coat wearing shady people you meet like at night. So, like, it's 4 a.m. in the morning, you're around the back of a 7-Eleven, you go, look, Steve. Suspect Steve. Have you got me the dirt on the enemies?
I called Marvin and no one picked up. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. He's my guy.
We'll get to that.
He's my usual guy.
We'll get to Marvin later, as it happened. So... All right, so we're light on the ground as far as, you know, information about the actual episode's creators go this time around.
Right.
But what we're not light on information about is the actual episode itself. So, the Sword Doctor, could you please give us your usual brand of delightful baritone and tell us what actually happens in episode 2?
All right.
Insert, like, you know, CNN news ticker noise, like here. Like...
And now, the news. Banana Fish 2 in another country.
No, I'm not going to do the whole thing like this. Right. So, high-level summary of what happened in the episode. So, we begin with the standoff, right? Arthur and Marvin versus Ash. Skipper and AG are hostages. And Ash agrees to... Ash agrees to give up his weapon... Right,
he agrees to give up his gun. Sorry, that was cruel of me. I should have done that.
No, listen, I'm sorry. All is fair game. So his sawed-off gun, you know, he gives it up and says, like, let him go. And then the OP begins. And what a hot banger, right? A straight hot banger in your ears.
how many times have I made jokes about, like, you know, music from the early 2000s that you seem to despise, and yet we seem to get a tune that feels like it comes from that era, but also isn't pastiche and played out, and also not shit. Like, I always start banging my head.
It's good.
I would have throw up the horns when this OP started.
It's really fucking good.
There is something about the OP that I'll get back to on my talking points, actually, mm-hmm. later on. So stick a pin in that, folks. Like, pins everywhere. Like, that's my new skit.
I hope this is not the talking point, but AG's jacket in the OP. Wow. Yeah. I love it.
I would wear that. I would
Holy shit.
Wear that.
It's good.
That is a good jacket. Like, that is... Okay, open question. Let's make it... In fact, we'll make a swear poll out of this just for shits and giggles. Which jacket is better from these two anime characters? Kaiji's jacket or Eiji's?
Twitter poll.
I will make that. It.
Now that's a question. That's a question for you right there.
Shadon.
Because I would own both.
Can you put it on the poll as I talk?
Let's have a look.
All right. So, here we go. Marvin is torturing Eiji. That's what we're getting into here. Or he's preparing to, right? No, he does. He does. He kicked the shit out of him off screen, and then they throw him in the garage with Skip and Eiji. Eiji, in very typical, like, good boy boyfriend fashion, like, bandages Ash up.
Bandages Marvin.
No,
like,
just
like,
don't.
He was in the Sawbones, the back alley doctor.
God, bandages up Ash.
Hey, bandages. I got a wounded man back here. Can you help us out?
with a part of his shirt. And so Ash then, like, tricks Marvin in his way. You know, he's using his boyish wiles, his sex appeal, to allow Marvin to drop his guard. Kicks Marvin. They run away. Eiji manages to escape because he's a pole vaulter. And he rips a lead pipe off of a brick wall and pole vaults over a barbed wire fence, no less, into a pile of boxes and shit. Ends up cutting himself, injuring himself. He loses a lot of blood, such that he passes out shortly thereafter and goes to the hospital. And Arthur says to... This is very, like, specific detail, but... Arthur tells Marvin if he wasn't so perverted, then Ash would not have got away. It definitely made me roll my eyes, but, you know.
Well, we're not meant to like Arthur.
No.
So he can make those comments all he wants. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, I hope that he gets his fucking fingers chopped off and fed back to him. That's how little I like him, right?
Yes.
But, which is entirely
Agreed.
Intentional, of course.
Agreed. But it goes back to the internalized homophobia, I think. I think it's going to be the case with a lot of characters.
Yeah, that seems to be a running trend at this point.
Shorter, our boy, purple mohawked Shorter. An alt-color version of Duck King from Fatal Fury. He's on the hunt. He's finding out where his buddy is. Mm-hmm. The cops... are talking. We have a scene with them while Eiji's in the hospital. The two detectives we met from before that are on good terms with Ash, they reveal that the suicides that had been popping up are actually, like, they were all Dino's enemies. So, are they really suicides? So,
well, like you said, perversity, big air quotes, suicide in gigantic, yes. Uh-huh. Colored air quotes.
So Shorter then shows up. He crashes the party, finally. He's found out that they're at the East Wharf, and he and his buddies throw down. Ash manages to get free, and it's war. You know, guns firing, people kicking the shit out of each other. It's great. Then the cops roll in, you know, because Eiji told them where everybody was. And Marvin is so... you know, fucking mad that,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's pointing a gun at Ash. He's going to kill him. He's like, well, I wanted you to die slowly because I hate you, because I love you and can't have you, and you rub my nose in it, so I'm going to kill you. But then, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Skipper, like, jumps in the way. Because he's like, no, Ash, like, no. And Marvin turns around and puts two in his chest and kills him.
Yeah.
It really sucked. It really sucked. Now, may I ask you once again, while I talk, to tend to the
Twitter poll.
Because I would like you to put on the poll question, were you surprised they died in episode 2? And you just put a pronoun they, and yes or no. And we'll probably get into talking about this more in depth later. So, Dino, we get a scene of him on the phone making calls, and it appears that feels very early, but he's turned on Ash. He's like, you can't tame a lynx, fuck it. Like, let's squeeze this boy, let's crush this boy, scrag him, get the banana fish, whatever. Let's do it. And so they rig a setup. Ash has, even though his hands are bound together, he has commandeered a car and followed Marvin into a hotel.
And yeah, not exactly driving 10 and 2 here, but he's doing all right.
That's right. So he, you know, beats it up the stairs to follow Marvin and opens a door. Marvin's dead. He's looks like he's been shot a couple times, maybe 3 or more. Pretty clear to me who it was that did that. Mr. Evanstein, the cop.
That prick.
That enters the scene.
We'll talk about you, Evanstein, you unmitigated piece of shit.
What a garbage human. God. Fucker.
Fucking cop bent as a dog's back fucking leg. I can't survive on a police pension. Like, go fucking eat a bag of dicks, you fucking bellend. Ugh.
So, Evan...
Mind you, like... Sorry, just to interrupt you there. One thing I should stress, by the way, folks, so people who have, like, recently joined us from Franks, is that normally when I get mad about, like, you know, characters and such, and I start throwing out the profanities and mixing my words together, like, you know, I'm doing the world's worst, you know, insult mixtape. Generally speaking, in Franks at least, that was because I was genuinely annoyed at how the characters were acting and how the story was going, because it was just shite. But my annoyance of what's happened here, such as with Skipper's death, and also with what's happened with Evanstein, that is the way the show wants you to feel. I'm just articulating probably quite strongly. But that's intentional. You're not meant to like the fact that happened to Skip. You're certainly not meant to like the fact, like Evanstein at all. So just so we're clear, this is not me like hating on the show for once. It's just me expressing the emotion that the show wants to get out. Me just, you know, me being colorful about it.
Yes. I think it's a, you know, this is like, this is the mark of a good show, that it can, that it understands the reaction it wants to get out of you, and then it gets it very, very strongly. Totally different from other things we've covered, which shall remain nameless.
Good. May stay that way forever.
Yeah, crossing my fingers for that one. So, yeah, Evanstein shows up after Ash realizes that he's been framed. Like, as soon as he sees him dead, you know, the cops enter because they were following him, and oh shit, it's a setup. And the two friendly cops are out of their jurisdiction, so Evanstein takes him and interrogates him by using the porn that Ash was in when he was 10 or 11 years old, both photos and videos in the police station to make him crack, to jar him, to get him emotional and sort of trigger this traumatic reaction in him. Now, I'm no torture expert, so I'm not really sure how this is supposed to make him talk.
Jesus, thank Christ for that. I mean, I thought you were a lovely guy. I didn't have you down as, like, you know, being a CIA waterboard or anything like that. So that's good. I'm glad you at least got that out there.
No, I you know, was on that track and then I changed majors. So, no, so...
A wise and ethical choice.
Like, Also, I mean, so there's some really great character acting by Ash in this scene. I mean, like, both the animation and the voice actor, like, they really sell that here's this real trauma coming back into the guy, into this guy's life that has really scarred him, and that he does not want to even think about for a moment. I mean, he's very pale, even paler than usual. He's, you know, panting. You can hear he's, like, you know, on the verge of a panic attack, if not outright having one. It's really great. And probably, like, my favorite bit of unintentional comedy in this episode is when the uni comes in to transfer him to the hospital. Just the uniformed, you know, could be a traffic cop, walks into the room. There's a, you know, spread of child pornography on the table. There's a video playing on the other wall, hasn't been turned off by Evanstein. The uni doesn't bat an eye. He just walks in there, like, and it's, all right, Ash, let's go, hospital, and then leaves.
I had not even thought that. Just, but that's so true. Like, wow. I mean, well, don't get me wrong. What's happening here to Ash is awful, fucking disgraceful, and terrible. But I have to give credit to that guy. Like, that's employed the mum's shit there. Like, you know, I can handle this, yo. Let me just come in, do my bit, take him away. Holy moly.
That was grisly, you're right. That was a really heart-rending scene. I mean, it hurt me, dude. It really did. Not a lot more to go through. You see that we get confirmation, if you didn't guess it by now, that Evanstein is dirty. He's on the phone with Dino, as you say. He says, you know,
he's on the take.
You can't live on police pension alone, so you gotta get in bed with the mob and sell out the good boys.
You're quite right, Kay. That is exactly what Evanstein was trying to do. He didn't even need to get Ash to flat out, you know, say anything, because you can make the link. Like, if you're completely, like, unknowledgeable, like, now, let's say you're someone else in the police department who's watching the interview tape of that and the film footage of that, not the actual pornography, but rather the interview, and you see that happen, and then you see Ash's reaction, your immediate connection is, well, that's all the evidence I need and all the motive I need for him committing the murder. Like, fuck.
No, you're totally right also, Kay, that, I mean, he says that, you're right, Evanstein basically says that outright. You know, as the trauma and tension in the room escalates, you know, he does the, like, thing where he slams his head on the table and is like, he did it to you, and you killed him, admit it! You know, does that whole thing. And
I'm actually very glad you didn't do, you know, torture and interrogation, because you're scarily good at that. That was impressive.
Well, I have kids. This is what we... No, I'm kidding. Don't ever do that to the children.
Your wife play good cop, bad cop? Who is the good cop and who's the bad cop in your family?
We play good cop and gooder cop. We're big softies. It sucks. No, we're very... Aww. Listen, it's not good. It's not good. But so let's see. Where are we in the story? So the red-haired, the curly-headed cop, I don't have most of their names down yet, but he, like, in a very sort of weird move, I mean, he makes sense of it, but, like, it seems a bit of a reach to me, asks AG, like, hey, can you, you know, get Ash to relent?
Yeah, that was a bit of a jump on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he justifies it by saying, look, he saved you.
Do you reckon he's read the manga and he knows what's going on? He's just like, pre-gestation, push them in the right direction.
Yeah, the fucking grandfather paradox going on. but no, totally. You're just sort of like, well, I mean, all right, you know, he did save him. So, sure. I mean, I guess anything is worth a try if you want to save Ash's life, right? And thinking, okay, save this kid so maybe he can get him to, like, give up whatever hold he has on Dino, give up his trump card. And they have a conversation in the hospital, do AG and Ash, and Ash, like, envies the freedom of AG. And he says, you're able to fly. And I don't think he's just talking about the pole vaulting.
No, it's absolutely a metaphor. But certainly, Christ, You know, like how I said before, like when we had, like, you know, the Rory Desho conspiracy theory of things linking together, we had, of course, the return of Papa and Banana Fish, and now we've got the return of the concepts of flying. And in two episodes, it's already been sold way more to me than anything that ever came out of that fucking bastardized co-pros, you know, 24 episodes of meandering nonsense. So there's your link, but here's how you do it right.
Yes. And so Eiji ends up not even asking him to give up the banana fish. Oh, by the way, good call, Kay. I believe it is Charlie, the red-haired cop. Charlie. So, yeah, so they don't... Eiji, like, you know, he just says that he couldn't ask him something like that, like, to give up something so important. He felt like he couldn't, like, it wasn't his place. Like, he just felt... I guess he saw how committed Ash was to this, and he could tell how important it was to him, so he did not want to try to pry that away from him. And so Dino has made a call to a judge who has expedited Ash's arraignment hearing. The defendant wasn't even present. They just pushed it through, sent him to prison. And he's going to state prison, and...
Oh, don't you mean Arkham Asylum?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
That is literally what I thought it looked like. It was just missing the wrought iron sign above the gates. Like, state prison, oh, this is going to be like some, like, really nasty concrete correctional facility. You know, it's going to bust your balls. But on the outside, it looks like a boarding house. Not, of course, that makes what's inside any more pleasant, of course.
Dino owns a warden. And so... You know, he's showing a particularly nasty-looking gang of inmates, none of whom we see their faces, but we see the sort of menace coming, like, oozing off of these, like, tattooed arms and big,
snake.
Wide backs, and thinking, okay, these are, you know, a hit is basically put out on Ash here.
Is it a hit, though? This is something I'll get back to. I'm not entirely convinced it's a hit as in to kill him.
Hmm. I don't remember if they actually say that. They just... I could be assuming stuff. Maybe they're trying to, like, you know, get out of him, whatever it is. They're just going to make his life hell every day until he gives it
theory,
up.
I have a theory on this, which I'll get to when we get to the points I'm going to talk about.
The last big thing that really happens is the cops basically... get on, like, are trying to get on the horn to their man in jail, who has probably the greatest, like, one of the greatest anime names, Max Lobo. Fantastic
Lobo.
Name. That's so good.
Is he a DC Comics fan? Like, I am the Max Lobo fan. I am the main man. that is a name. Like, the names of this show, generally speaking, are pretty good.
Yes.
Not lie.
It is the best name I've encountered in anime this year since I watched Kekkai Sensen and met Stephen A. Starface. So, it's up there, Max Lobo.
That's pretty genius. That's legit.
So, and that's pretty much it. Then we kind of roll credits with the very subdued ED song. And that's episode 2.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
I guess now... it's time to move on to
talking points.
The talking points.
Okay. The one I'll lead off with here is actually to rewind to the interrogation scene in which the monarch played, particularly of Ash as a kid. So I want to talk here about the idea of direction leaving people's imaginations. So here's the thing, right? First, just as a disclaimer, by the way, I am going to talk about what actually happens in this as being disgusting, but I'm not talking, of course, about the act in a vacuum, like it's gay sex. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. But rather, the context is what actually makes it, you know, pretty vile. So the way this was presented to us, the audience, when we watch this, is that we don't see even maybe, like, 5% of what actually happens in that video. The most we get is a shot of, like, the bed and what might have been Marvin's thigh. Maybe it says, I don't know. So let me talk about what the imagination can do to people, because this is, in my view, a horror scene. It's meant to horrify you, yours, and indeed it does the characters in there. Not just Ash, of course, for whom he's having painful memories and old wounds being real, but also the cops who are with him as well. Charlie, for example, says he's going to puke. So, one of the things I really appreciate about this is that when you've gone from a manga to an anime, I imagine in the manga, that insert shot that we had of, and Kay, since you've seen it, please chime in to tell me if I'm correct or stuff. I imagine that insert shot we saw, that one frame or two frames there, was all it was in the manga. And then it cuts to the next frame, which would probably have been of Ash, like, you know, not looking, refusing to look at the camera. So I am very happy that if that is the case, and I'm again speculating here, that they kept it that way. Because it leaves in our minds, you know, open, it leaves our minds open to imagine it. And there's something about an intangible, you know, understanding of something terrible that, like, if you've ever seen a movie, for example, where someone is run over and the movie sometimes will cut away from it just before the point of impact. The idea behind that is because every individual person goes immediately to the end level of imagining how awful that is. So we don't need to see, like, the literal event. I mean, they can't obviously do that for a variety of reasons anyway. It's like, you know, set standards and practices and all. But this is what I like about the show so far. It keeps things under state and eastern, allows inference to take over, allows imagination to take over, and allows you to, you know, let your own mind imagine how horrible it is. I mean, how you would envision that scene, Doc, is probably different in some respects than how I would have done if we'd ever, you know, got animated. But I was very impressed that they allowed that to be the case, to allow it to sell the horror, because it's just something that you come up with, like, knowing that it's that man, that disgusting pig of a man, he's a fucking animal, have his way with Ash when he was barely 10 or 11. Like, just alone thinking about that conjures up unpleasant images in my mind.
Yeah.
And I think that that really sells it. I think that really sells the horror far better than you could have actually, you know, done by showing it outright. So this is a prime example of how less is sometimes very much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember talking a little bit about that, and granted, the horror being imagined is nowhere near, you know, what this could be. But in Angel's Egg, there are a couple scenes where, you know, before the young soldier traveler boy, right before he pierces the egg with his sword cross thing, they cut away. And so that, like, it, and you just, you don't even hear the sound. And you don't see, like, or that maybe that's it. God, why is my memory so bad? Maybe they don't, like, cut away from, like, they don't show the egg, but they sort of show the boy doing the motion. And yeah, you don't hear the sound. They cut out the audio, because I think similarly, like, the kind of blanks that your mind fills in are kind of more shudder-inducing and horrifying. And they do another thing in the movie where they cut away from the girl right before she screams, and they leave the sound in, and I guess it's for you to, like, imagine kind of the anguish that she, that that her face shows.
Yeah, you have to conjure up yourself the actual facial expression that she would have shown. And there's probably something much more primal about what's in your head rather than what's actually seen on the screen, what could be imagined. I mean, how many times have you watched something where it's like there's a big mystery about the way a character looks, for example, and it's revealed, you're like, oh, it looks like Johnny McNormal person, whatever. It's better to leave some things ambiguous, because then the ambiguity allows your imagination to take hold. And usually, there's one thing about human imagination I can speak to quite personally, you tend to assume the worst. So, but that scene was very perfectly executed. Can't think of any way it could be done
better. Yeah, it's really harrowing. I mean, it really got me, for sure. So,
next point.
Here's my first talking point. I'm returning to it. It's from last time. The pace. The pace of the show. Now, I loved the sort of brisk pace of the first episode. I thought, this is fantastic. I really love that it's just like blow after blow after blow, just things happening, and I'm staying on my toes, and I'm having to just laser focus in. And you know, that pace is by and large replicated here. And but now with this episode in particular, I'm not disliking it, but like and I know this is probably a function of, you know, everyone who's read the manga will say that things are more given more room to breathe in the manga. You have more time. Things are spaced out and elongated and not kind of crammed into this tight 24-minute space. But like I said, I don't dislike it, but this episode made me wonder, like, if we got a different version of this with a little bit slower pacing, like allowing some things to breathe, like, I wonder how it could be. Like, I mean, the fact that not even this... during the second episode, right, it hasn't even ended, and Dino has already turned on Ash. And, like, maybe this is kind of the way the story goes. There's, like, a turn, and then a coming together, and then a turn. Like, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think you're right. Like,
go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, so I'll just, like, that's... It made me... I wrote down how I was feeling about it, that, like, there's no kind of... It's just so different from 91 Days in this way. And so, again, this is the thing where people will be like, oh, it's a cliched mob story. It's like, well, like, I don't think doing it, like, one way and also doing it the opposite way, like, both can't be cliched. You know what I mean? One way has to be novel.
Nothing is original. I'm very sorry to say. So you could start throwing that term around anywhere. It's a value-free descriptor unless you offer some reasoning as to why.
I agree.
And the thing is, cliches can still be executed well regardless. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, monster stalking someone in a house. How many times have you seen that in film and television? That is a cliche. That doesn't mean it still can't be exciting and riveting to watch if it was done today, just as long as it's executed. I think that some people mistake the term cliche for an idea of it not being fresh. And the thing is, how you execute something can always be done in a fresh manner. It's just the core concept that's, you know, already been taken and, well,
yep,
tough. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know what? Those are apples and oranges. So I won't bring Persona 5 into this as an example of something that everyone feels is fresh, but it's not really fresh in terms of its core. It just executed really well. So, but I won't dwell on that. Just to finish up the point, I will just say, yeah, like there's not like the slow turn that I was expecting. I expected there to be a lot of like Ash and Dino in the same room, and there's just tension and you feel it crackling. I expected the slow coming apart, because that feels more like 91 Days, like where you have someone who's slowly kind of building their strength for a coup or kind of secretly turning. But trying to still keep it from the boss because they're not quite in the position of power they want to be. They don't quite have enough leverage.
Yeah.
And so that would feel like, to me, more of a traditional kind of mob story route. And I really like that. And I was kind of half expecting it. And I just wondered, like, if this was a differently paced show, like, would it feel that way? Like, would they be together longer? Would the turn feel slower? More? Would there be more tension?
Well,
was there stuff cut out? But like, again, this is not to say that I don't like it, because I feel like the fact that we're not even at the end of the second episode, the alliances have shifted, is kind of neat and interesting. It's like, well, they don't really have the tried and true, like they're not going to use up a lot of time kind of playing this beat out, so they're going to use their time to do other things and move things along. So I guess it could, you know, it's more interesting. It's just different. And I like both kind of approaches to this sort of thing. But I just wanted to highlight that I'm now kind of, I can definitely see how you might want something more deliberate. But this remains punchy and I still like it.
Yeah. To me, 91 Days like was the buildup of someone's, most of their life. Ash is flying by the seat of its pants. So if it feels chaotic, if it feels like things are shifting quickly, that's by design, because he's not at the time to actually properly brew up any sort of, you know, agenda or long game plan. He's like, every single part of this episode episode is survival moment by moment by moment. With the one exception of the scene between Ash and Agee in the hospital. At every point, Ash is like a cornered animal. So, there is that. I had a theory actually watching this, which is I don't think that when I said before about, like, you know, Dino putting out a hit on Ash, I don't think it's a hit, as in he's going to kill it.
Wait, is this your second talking point?
No, it's not,
okay,
actually.
I'll play the sounder when it's your when you get into your second point.
But my feeling on it is that what's going to happen is that one of the things I thought when this was going was like, okay, hold up. Now, we know Ash didn't murder Mark. He didn't even pick up the gun that I saw, so fingerprints, you know, there's your evidence right there. There you go. So I thought, all right, how is this going to play out? How would this play out given that? Now, I know full well that, you know, while that would exonerate him because it's a corrupt system, that's not even going to be counted. But hear me out on this, and if this is true or not, I don't need to be told because I'm happy to be surprised on it. But I get the feeling Dino is getting him sent to prison just essentially to have it played with by these inmates. Like, you know, they're going to... Well, if you've seen American History X, that's the way it's going. That's the kind of environment he's going to end up in and how he's going to be treated. And then he will be set free because of that evidence that exonerates him. He has been put back in his place. He has been made to feel like an object again. As Kay rightly pointed out in the chat, there was a scene in which, you know, as Ash is being led away, Charlie, I think it is, puts his hand on Ash, shows the Ash, and then he just literally lashes out like, no, do not fucking touch me. Do not even dare put your hands on me. Because the way I read that was as he came out of the interrogation room, he felt like he'd been soiled. Soiled watching it. And maybe that's because of the actual acts of watching it, or because he felt like he was back in those shoes again, like he'd been brought down a peg.
Yeah, I mean, don't think it had anything to do with that guy and their relationship. Or what. I think anyone in the world touched him, he would lash out in that manner because of where he was mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, but there are certainly ways I could see this going that would end up leading back to a sort of kind of resumation of the status quo that we got in episode one, which is that Ash would once again be Dino's second cat. So it's we'll see. We will see.
I'm excited.
Me, the pacing, I am too. Like, I like, man, if there's nothing else you can say about the show, it's now ended on two good cliffhangers in a row.
Yes.
It knows how to keep you interested. And maybe that's a function of the manga format, because I can't speak to how frequently the manga came out or what the gaps were between it. But they will have existed, of course, if you especially watching it, reading it, you know, volume by volume. So I think that it's actually kind of, you know, really good for the authors to have actually done that. And it's translated well to the television format as well. So we'll see. But I'm certainly interested to see what happens next. I can see how they might have going back to the way things were, but while also still harboring new memories, new resentments. Of course, age is now a factor in all of this as well. So let's see what comes of it. So I believe it's now my second talk.
Next point.
Go for it.
Okay. Let us talk about CG.
Yes. My favorite.
my favorite thing ever. Now, for those of you who have not, you know, watched Mori Desho at length, I'm also doing this admittedly before I've got my Land of the Lustrous podcast out, in which I do discuss the topic of CG in more detail. But for me, for the most part, anime has used CG, how do I put this politely, terribly, absolutely awful on the whole. Now, for me, like, CG should generally be used for inanimate objects sparingly. Land of the Lustrous got away with it because it was entirely CG. It was entirely about characters who were not, in the strictest sense, human. So it also had a very fluid style. It used certain tricks with its direction, particularly in the scene which Dia, there being, you know, pursued by a Lunarian. I could go on, I'll get the podcast out at some point, you can listen to me talk about it then rather than me derail the podcast now that we're trying to do. But what I noticed when I was watching this episode is that there's a number of sequences that happen which are from the first person. Firstly, Ash, Agee, and Skip's escape from the factory. I mean, it looked like the toxic waste factory from RoboCop to me. That's the thing that I honed back in on. But when this is happening, they're running through back alleys, and it's first person. but it's definitely CG the way these have been animated. And then when Ash actually finally catches up to Marvin in the apartment block that he's in, that is also CG, but it's also from the first person. And certainly there were probably more instances. I think there was one instance of Shaw sort of like leaping from up, like, you know, dumpster to dumpster or something, and that was CG as well, which was a slightly flaky, but that's neither here nor there. And yeah, I see you doing that. But my point to this is this, right? When they had it used for the CG, when they used it for the first person perspective, mm-hmm. I thought they did a really, really good job with that. Because it's not impossible to animate a first person perspective in 2D, frame by frame, cell by cell, but it is difficult. And so when you've got that freedom of camera movement, because you're operating a camera in a 3D space that's been pre-modeled and pre-rendered, having it, you know, be that way really sells the emotion of those sick moments. Like, you feel like you yourself are running when they're having that. And then as Ash takes his deliberate and measured slow steps, it feels like it helps really build up that moment of reveal. Like, where you think, oh, God, he's going to burst into that room, he's going to deck Marvin, he's going to beat the shit, and oh, well, you know, he's been turned into Swiss cheese. So there you go. In fact, the only bit of animation that was 2D in that was Ash's hand, which was just a 2-second thing in the bottom left corner as he gently opens the door. So, again, this show, like, it's doing so many things right, and one of the things I did not expect it to do, but it is doing, is applying its use of CG appropriately. It's using it where it's effective. It's using it where it gets the strength of that particular animation method across really well, and it's sold both moments and enhanced them. And again, not saying it couldn't have been done with, you know, 2D techniques, but to me, that just sounds like smart, you know, sense. Like, okay, here's the thing, right? We want to do, how should we do it? Do it by 2D, mm-hmm. 2D, super expensive, super laborious, CG, we can still sell it, we can make it feel fluid, and it'll be cheaper and easier to do. So kudos to the show for doing that.
Totally. What did you think of the Statue of Liberty in the OP?
It was acceptable.
Oh, that was... It made me happy. So I'll say on that. So I guess for my second talking point, this one will be brief. I want to talk about the music.
Ooh.
Because, oh my God. Like, they're scoring this really fucking well. I mean, really, really fucking well. Like, I mean, the OP hits you and you're just like, damn. Damn. But then, I even liked more than the OP. Like, pretty much right from the next scene, like, there's this synth. And I'm just like, synth. Yes! It's so good. Like, it's so...
Ladies, gentlemen, others who might be listening or watching at home, if ever you want to get Doc to do anything for you, just start playing synth music. Like,
I mean, pretty much.
It's like when you hold, like, a, you know, stopwatch for someone's hypnotized and, like, listen to the sound of my voice. No, listen to the sound of my synth, Doc, and then please hand me your wallet.
Yes.
Destroy now, this. If you do steal any money from Doc, send it my way as a tip. Just throwing out free advice there for you.
I mean, I can't dispute any of that. I love it. And I was just mesmerized by it. And there's like guitar in a couple scenes I thought was really rad also. Mm. But man, those synths, they really sell it. And it makes it feel more like the kind of original time period. You know, they feel very sort of mid-80s. And
feels like a bit of a melange of things, yeah. Yeah. We still have more cell phone use in this particular episode, mm-hmm. like, such as when IG, you know, is injured. He doesn't so much steal as it just kind of falls in his hands when the lady runs away. How that played out in the manga, I don't know. Maybe there's a phone booth, perhaps, or maybe the person in question had one of those gigantic brick cell phones, like, you know, way back when. Yep. The ones that, you know, were probably bigger than my headphones right now.
Yes.
And less functional.
Growing up, we called those the Zach Morris phones. He was a Saved by the Bell character that carried one in a bag. Just a giant. Wow. I guess, are they... A rotary phone is different, right?
Rotary is a dial one.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, no, not those. This was just like a... Like multiple bricks, like, with an antenna that you had to, like, pull up it's incredible. But yeah, like, but that sort of, it's funny because that kind of music is, you know, very current now as well. So it doesn't actually sound out of place conveniently. But no, I just, I really, really loved the music. And while I type on camera here, because I want to once again say the name of the person who does the music, Shinichi Osawa. Man, what a good job that you've done, Shinichi. The only other anime music credit they have, once again, is for the Ninja Slayer from Animation, ONA, Trigger's work. But and I haven't heard the music in that. Maybe it's really good. I might have to check it out now that I am experiencing their work in Banana Fish because it's real good. Oh my gosh. This just occurred to me, and I should have said this right at the beginning, but I'll say it now just because I don't want to forget. And I just want to like apologize on camera. I've apologized to this person in like over DM, but last episode I referred to Anifem's writer Vry Kaiser as a she, and that is not the pronoun they prefer. They prefer they and them, and Vry was very gracious when I reached out to them to apologize. But I should have known better, because even though they're not in their the correct pronouns are not in their Twitter bio, they are in their Anifem bottom line. And so I should have remembered that. So to Vry and to others who, you know, might have been put off, might have been offended at my ignorance, it was just that. It was ignorance. It was not malicious. And I'm truly sorry. Ignorance doesn't excuse it. And I totally apologize. I know how important that is. So, yeah. Again, very sorry about that.
All odds, that is just that if folks at home who are listening to us as we go through this feel that we're not, you know, up to code, so to speak, tell us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way we'll learn. It's the only way we'll better ourselves. We're not perfect, and we never will be, but at the same time, doesn't mean we can't strive to be better than the way we are right. So, by all means, please do chime in and tell us if we do, you know, cross the line or something with what we say.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say nothing more.
Next right. Point.
Point two
right,
for
oh,
you.
Mm-hmm.
I volley.
Is it point three?
Did you? Yes, I guess. No, I've done two.
And you've done. Side, so.
How are we losing track? That's just small numbers.
I'm the one who's had a. I'm the one who's had a can of lager here. What's going on, mate? right, okay. So, the other thing I want to discuss, well, is just Ash and AG's relationship in this episode. Because there's a couple of key things that happen here that change both Ash's understanding of AG, AG's understanding of Ash, and the audience's as well. Like, they're all kind of like in a nice little melange. We all learn things. So, there is the pole vaulting scene you mentioned, which I will say, like, when he said, I'm a pole vaulter, I thought to myself, hold on, that's a bit out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'd expect MacGyver to say that he was a pole vaulter. Like, that's what I would think. But, no, apparently he's a journalist, but also pole, whatever, I'm fine with it, it's so minor. But when this scene happened, first off, there's Ash's reaction to it, which is, of course, that, you know, he sees it and he's blown away by it. But this is also a follow-up to... Sorry?
Oh, I just, like, I mean, the way he looks at AG, he's like, he really sees him, I think, in that moment. I mean, before, when they talked, he, I think, you know, was a little bit charmed by him. It was like, you know, oh, this guy, he's cute. You know, he seems cute. He seems, he took a liking to him. But in that moment, AG was just shining so brightly, I think Ash really, like, saw him. And that was just a cool moment.
Yeah. But this also ties into a smaller thing that happened earlier, in that AG actually tore off a part of his shirt and used it to bandage one of Ash's wounds after he'd been beaten up. Now, this is, of course, Ash learning about you, but what it told me was that I, in the previous episode, had made not a few jokes about, you know, in good humor about AG being, you know, nice, straight-edge kind of kid, you know, wouldn't cross the road when the lights were red, you know, he wouldn't jaywalk, he wouldn't do anything untoward, he probably wouldn't even vape, like, he wouldn't do anything. You know, he wouldn't.
Yo, AG, check out the sweet rig.
Nope. No, I don't. I'm not about that life.
He would probably find the idea of energy drinks distaste. Never mind alcohol. That was the kind of jokes I made previously. But there's something.
Is that Noss? Get it away from me. Yeah, no, he came across as that way to me too. Like super naive, very naive.
Yeah, very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I learned from watching this scene is that AG actually can be called to action. He's quite competent. Like, okay, he knows that he bandages Ash's wound. Like, he previously saw the blood from the guy that got Jack got Jack's, appropriately enough.
That's right.
Like, Jack got Jack previously.
Oh, shit. Like, that was Jack.
Yeah,
it was Jack. Yeah.
It's appropriate. I mean, does that count as nominative determinism? Answers on a postcard, people in the chat.
But
the point being here is that when there's a call to action, AG will do it. Now, he saw the blood previously from Jack, and he freaks out, sees Ash bleeding. Immediately, like, it's not even like a case having to bandage it, but he actually just tears some clothes apart to do it, which is, you know, a step above some having something handy that could bandage that wound. And then, of course, the pole vaulting thing. And both Skip and, I think, Ash actually say to him, like, if that breaks, you're dead.
Yeah, you are done. It could be so rotten.
There are consequences to his failure here, and he does get injured by doing so.
Sorry to interrupt you. This reminded me, like, so I spent like a few years of my life on. It wasn't
a
like
a farm?
It wasn't really a functioning farm, but it was Close very up. Like, you know, it was out in the country, like in the sticks,
in the boonies,
the woods, the boonies. And there were, you know, animals and. There were donkeys and chickens and stuff. This is my stepdad and his mom's, like, land. And in true sort of, like, I'm trying to think of the right way to not say redneck. But, like, in true fashion of those sorts of people, like, they had, like, old cars and shit, like, just sitting in, like, the grass and rusting away and, like...
Yeah.
Grass growing up, and there were some pipes as well left over from projects my stepdad did. And he, like, was an amazing builder. I mean, he built like a ton of our house, and I think my entire grandma's house, his mom's, like from nothing. Like, sometimes it was he and his father, but then when his father passed, it was just him and occasionally people helping out. And there was pipes, and one day when I was a kid, I picked one up that was like very rusty, and when I touched like the rust, it was like, it just like, have you seen in the movies when something like turns to ash and blows away? Like, it would look like that 3D effect. It was nuts. It was just like just pouring away into like a pile of dust. So yeah, so I really like the visual, like, of a rotting pipe. Like, I haven't thought about that in years, and this show brought that to mind, and I was like, oh my god, you will die if the pipe is rusty or rotten.
Well, AG got lucky. Half. So there is that scene, and I bring that up because I want to say, like, you know, this is AG proving that he's capable of action, he's capable of, you know, stepping up to the plate when the moment demands it. But then there's a scene that contrasts this, which is the scene between him and Ash in the hospital when Ash is in bed. And they have a conversation here. And you know how you praised the voice acting before and the direction?
Yeah.
I'm going to do so again because I felt like it's one of those rare instances where I was watching a scene which I thought to myself, this character feels like a completely different person than what I've seen before. But it was entirely intended. It wasn't an out-of-character thing for him. It felt like a natural letting down of his guard. The tone of voice was so much softer coming out of Ash. it felt like he was becoming a regular human being rather than constantly being on edge. Like at any moment he just wanted to pounce on, hit someone off, get in a fight. Like he was constantly on lookout for danger. Like it was very, very telling. And then the scene in which, you know, like this little thing here, I mean, I'm a bit of a lighting fetishist when it comes to anime, I must admit, because I banged on about it in Frank's, so I'll bang on about it here. Like, Ash is looking towards Eiji and his face is in shadow, and there's a window, of course, next to the bed. So when he leans over, when his face is over, he says, like, I saw you fly, when he starts talking about it, his face enters the light. And that is an image, a representation of where he wants to be. That is him stepping out from darkness into light. And if you think that's the only instance of lighting being used well, as a mild tangent, when we first see Arthur, he comes out of the darkness like the slithering out of it like a snake. So lighting is used to great effect in this show, and I really appreciate it. But the reason I bring up both of these scenes simultaneously is that I had previously mentioned my theory that I thought that Eiji was on one side and Ash was on another in terms of their characteristics and their general personalities. So we have clean cut, you know, A grade, you know, wouldn't spill orange juice in his grandmother's house, Eiji. And on the other hand, we have Ash Lynx, who is basically one, you know, stylish coat away from being a member of the Warriors. That's literally his close. No, really, that is literally his character. And I think to myself, okay, we'll have the gay romance element eventually, which I actually need to bring up as a separate point once I've made this one, just as a small one. And these two, you know, characters, like, they'll of course come together in terms of having a romance, but they'll also come together in terms of, you know, meeting a middle ground in which they've learned things from each other or, you know, gain new shades of their personality and new dimensions. So we see a character established as incredibly soft and a character established as incredibly hard come a little bit closer. Eiji rises to action. He, you know, grows the ball. I don't know, maybe that's a bad term for me to use, but he, you know, shows the initiative, takes action. Ash lets his guard down. Now, to be fair to Ash, he is still in a place of privacy, a place of comfort. He is healing. You know, he's been badly injured. He's not like, you know, in a normal social environment where he would otherwise potentially let down his guard anyway. But it's a step. It's a step that's been brought on by these events. Similarly of Eiji, they're, you know, things are pushing them closer towards each other. Maybe not right now in terms of them becoming romantic, but I would also argue it definitely is in terms of them, you know, learning things from each other. Because I don't think for a second that if Eiji had just been there with Skipper on his own, and Ash hadn't, if he had never met Ash, would he have done the pole vaulting thing then? I don't think so. I think that perhaps he would have been... He was probably inspired by meeting Ash and seeing him, you know, take such affirmative action. He thought to himself, all right, if he can do it, I can too.
Right.
So I was very, very impressed with this because this is a good... Like, I thought episode one was really solid in its requirements as a first episode. But episode two, to me, has done a great job in now saying, okay, here's how we're going to start shifting. We've got these chess pieces. We've got the... Name any game you want. Backgammon, chess, pool, polo, I don't, whatever. You know, StarCraft, etc.
Parties.
Here's the board. Now we're going to start moving them. And we're going to move them slowly. We're going to move them subtly. So you can get some idea of the long term.
Yeah.
But I was very, very appreciative of how well directed and well executed all these scenes were in service of good scripts. I've been in the desert as far as good scripts and anime goes. I have been a thirsty man. I have been dying to get to that oasis where I can finally, you know, have something I can sink my teeth into and just enjoy. Something that was well written, well crafted, and well honed. By fucking Christ, we have it. If I may very quickly go on to my 3.5 point, which is about the gay romance song.
Next point.
This is specifically about the OP. Now, two things actually caught me off guard in this, which is first off, that one of the characters flat out uses the word gay, specifically Skip referring to Marvin. Now, I will confess that I have not seen anywhere near as much anime as probably most people on the planet. I'm in the minority in terms of like how much I watch, like four dozen full series.
That's probably more than most people on the planet.
Well, here's my point though. I cannot recall for the life of me the last time I actually heard the word gay used literally.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
In an anime show. Yuri on Ice, but that was like a year and a half ago, so I can't say with any certainty. So it took me aback, not because I was like, oh my god, it's gay. It's like, no, that's, don't mistake me here. I was just more shocked to see that for a show that supposedly was very subtextual, literally went right in and said, oh yeah, that dude is gay.
Yeah, it's funny, like
Skip as well.
And yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it is. Like, so this is a show taking place in our world, which is sort of in many ways, especially when this was written, not designed to accommodate queer people and is hostile to queer people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just to follow up from something I said in the last episode, I am so sorry I can't remember their name, but one of the lovely people who commented on our first episode, by the way, thank you to all the people who did.
Yes, thank you very much.
One of the lovely people commented confirmed that, yes, Banana Fish, the manga, was set and written in the time of the AIDS crisis when there was a lot of persecution and a lot of hostility towards gay people, particularly gay men. I mean, I'm fairly confident that was also around the time the, you know, don't ask, don't tell policy came into play in the American military.
Yeah, man, I remember...
Great idea. Brilliant idea. Fantastic. Completely flawless way of handling things, you know. Let's suppress the minority even more. Fucking brilliant. Especially when it comes to people serving, you know, and putting their lives away for their country. Great idea. Nice one, Reagan, you fucking snot-nosed dick. So, if you had a snot as big as Reagan's, would you not be embarrassed looking at yourself every time you get up in the morning? Brushing your teeth thinking, wow, that's a clown nose.
I want to say, I thought Bill Clinton came up with that. Yes.
Maybe.
It was. Yeah, it was the I was going to say, because I remember, so I wasn't, I have no memories as a boy of Reagan in the White House, but I certainly remember the Clintons. And yeah, I remember when this became a thing. And it was seen as very progressive by a lot of people. Especially where I live, you know, that, like, you're meant to, I mean, just that, I guess it was the idea that you're, like, allowing them to have their kind of space and be who they are as long as they don't force it on you, which, I mean, when you say that now, it just sounds terrible and gross, but, I mean, that's, like, third way politics, right, of the day, but, but yeah, I mean... how did we even get on this?
Because I went off on a rant, as often tends to happen.
What were we talking about? So Skipper used the word gay. That's right.
Yeah, that took me aback. And what also surprised me was that in the OP, there were no hints that I could make out. And I'm speaking just specifically to my perspective of my reading of it, that there would be any... Like, if you watch the OP and thought, am I going to watch the show? You wouldn't believe from the OP that there would be a gay romance at some point later. Do you feel the same? Like, you know, there were any elements? Like, I don't think you even see like AG and Ash like interact directly in the OP.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from a person who hasn't like analyzed it or whatever, like, I mean, it certainly doesn't like, you know, it's not like hitting you over the head with it or whatever. But like our perspectives are weird. Maybe there's a lot of cues and we're just not seeing them.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but maybe not. I mean, please respond, folks. And
yeah, please tell us. But the reason I bring this up is not actually to criticize it, because I'm curious if they're going to do something with this later. So hear me out. If I were making this show, one of the things I might want to do is, because this is a two-course show, so we've got 24 episodes to go, 22 specifically. Yeah, I know, right? I'm actually excited about this.
Yeah.
What a refreshing feeling. Nice. But traditionally, when animes get to the, you know, midpoint of their 24-episode runs, they do switch OP. So imagine this, if you will. Imagine if the OP that we get halfway through does change to be more overt about the gay, you know, relationshipsness. And then it itself would be, you know, a progression from the way things started, which is that it's entirely hidden. It's becoming one of the major points of the show. Not to say the show will not be about that before then, but rather it'll be the show using the OPs to make a statement about how things have progressed in a positive manner. I'm curious to see if that'll be the case. Maybe that's me overreading it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe MAPPA have different ideas. It's off me to say. Mm-hmm. But I certainly look forward to seeing what they do with that.
Yeah, so Kay says that she thought that the opening did a good job of not giving much away in terms of outright textually saying these two boys are going to have a relationship. But she did notice a lot of symbolism. And I'll just that's the thing is I'll have to, I think, go back and look for it, and but maybe
I was too busy headbanging. So
exactly. Yeah. No. Maybe. Viewers can let us know like what to watch out for there. That might be
for sure. Yeah.
Symbolic of what's to come.
If we miss anything out that's worth noting, then by all means do tell us. Like, we're not
here
to, you know, preach that we know absolutely everything. Christ, I know fuck all, to be quite honest. But please do tell
us. Sweet
AF
or sweet FA, as you said. You know, sweet FA.
Well, you know.
I'm sorry, Kay. I'm on a roll of assigning the wrong pronouns to people. This two episodes in a row, I assumed by Kay's name that Kay was a she, but Kay is a he.
I'm so sorry. What a failure.
I thought the same. I assumed the same, which I shouldn't have done. But thank you for telling us, Kate. We'll make sure to use the proper pronoun from now on. Like, this is the thing, like, as we say, you know, we're not perfect, we will make mistakes, but please do correct us. We're not going to be offended by it. We're not, you know, going to be one of those people, like, you know, go, oh, well, excuse me for using that, for, like, for not saying that way. Like, no, we're not going to be like that. If there's one thing that I want to get going is now that we're doing this format for Stream of Thought, when we're more interactive, is just to have people actually interact.
Yes. So yes,
there we go.
Please do.
So please do tell us. But anyway, that was all I really wanted to say about the OP and that, just in that there's, like, you know, it surprised me. It took me back both in those senses, but that's a good thing.
Totally. So, yeah, so it's funny, like, when you... There's even... You made me think when you talked about that there's not a lot of anime that just says, hey, so-and-so is gay. Like, there's even anime like Symphogear, right, where the main character is living with their girlfriend. They sleep in the same bed. You know, it's not, they're not showing sexual acts. They do show, you know, they... You know, put their hand on the shoulder sometimes. Sometimes there's a hug. I can't remember if they kiss. I believe they do. But, like, it's the most obvious thing in the world that these two are lesbians and they love each other. But, like, they don't ever sort of say that they're lesbians. They don't use the word gay. But, like, I guess you could say, like, oh, the universe of Symphogear is one in which, like, it's not hostile to queer people. So, like, there's not, like, labels or whatever. I mean, I guess you could make this argument if you wanted to, right? That, like, in that universe, it's not, like, a designation that is worth, like, talking about to the characters in that world or whatever. I don't know, but, like, but, yeah, I mean, it's just funny, you know, that you have anime that the characters are in the relationships and things like that, but they don't use the word. But here, you know, in this particular setting... they do, and it's important, and it's important to the identities of these characters.
Yeah, it's not necessarily about stating the fact that Miles Gage is for the sake of it. Like, we're not having the Mass Effect Andromeda shit here, where, you know, you literally go up to a random person who's working on your ship and ask them how their day is going, and they go, hi, my name is, etc., etc. Also, I am transsexual, and I did this because I wanted to come out here somewhere I could properly express myself, because that's something someone would say to someone who's never met another person before right off the bat. Thank you, BioWare. You used to be good writers, and now you just can't.
Well, it's like James. It's like James said. Anthem stole all the good writers.
We'll see. The proof will be in the pudding. So you do want to avoid that as well. But in this case, the reason that actually happened was also to get Age's reaction to it, and that's quite telling how he does react to it, because maybe he's aware somewhat of his own sexuality as well, and the fact that, you know, Skipper can just quite easily point and sound like, "Oh yeah, he's gay." Maybe he feels maybe that he would be found out himself. Maybe he's afraid of it. There's readings you can take inside. It's not just simply for the sake of stating outright, as if though you were saying, oh, look at him, he's bald, would you believe? You know?
I would.
So, no, this is actually my hair. Like, it's just it's a cyborg piece. It's attached to my scalp. I can't actually take this off. When I get up, I don't actually take these off. I unplug them from my computer.
Amazing. I think we might have touched on all the points I wanted to talk about. I mean, Marvin is a motherfucker, and
may he not rest in peace.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make any moral judgments about dessert. That guy was a piece of shit. I guess the other one I brought up was how Ash looked at AG when he pole vaulted, and I have to say, in that scene, Ash was freaking hot. He was like the eyes, man. It was wow, woo, woo. It's like maybe like I want to. Yes, let's get to the romance, please. Like I'm very ready, very excited. Like for where this could go in all ways. And I mean, fucking like now that Skipper, you know, pour one out for Skipper, has been killed. It's fucking on, dude. It's on.
Actually,
you're going to make me say it like Donkey Kong. All right. That's how on it is. And I cannot wait. Like, it's going to be fucking war. And Shorter and Ash and AG and all, like, pistols are out, knives are out, pipes. It's going to be fucking final fight up in there. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
There is actually one thing I just wanted to mention as well about Skipper's death hit. And no, it's not the black guy dies first kind of trope. That's not it. If there's one thing that I have seen in a lot of shows I found a bit difficult to swallow is that they would often be in life and death scenarios where it didn't feel like the death part would ever really click. There wasn't a sense of mortality to the characters. And if there's one thing that happens a lot in this episode is characters getting injured. Like, in theory, diegetically speaking, or even like outside of that, AG getting injured and then ending up where he did, it didn't need to happen for the story to progress. You didn't need to write it that way. But he, of course, ends up with a shard of glass in his arm. Ash gets the ever-living shit kicks out of him. Skipper dies, like, and then there's, you know, a physical violence of, you know, Marvin looking like he's... If he had had his way with Ash, he would have raped him, of course. That was gonna happen if Ash had not, you know, of course, got the upper hand. There's the videos themselves. There is a very implied and tangible sense of physical threat in this show that I am very, very happy is there. Now, yeah. I will leave it for people to decide if they feel that Skipper should have died for that purpose, because I'll be honest, up until that point, while we did like him as a character, that seems to have only been his long-term function in the show. That I'm going to leave for people to decide on how they feel about that. I can't think of an answer to that myself right now.
It's
not even the fact he's black that's the issue. Although if people took umbrage towards the fact that he was black and died first, that is also a very fair reading of that. I'm not going to say that's wrong. But nonetheless, I do appreciate that the show does have a very strong sense of mortality by, like, who knows what might happen? People may very well live, but they could end up with permanent disfigurements. Like, hell, Arthur. Arthur had his goddamn fingers cut off. And that reminds him, every time he looks his hand, each time, he thinks to himself, kill that boy. I can kill him with this hand that I now have that is still, like, stitched up around the joints. And that's something I really appreciate about shows like this, as opposed to shows like, well, you know, the show that will not be named. Yeah, I saw that look. Where it didn't feel to me, a lot of the time, even if characters did bleed, that they were ever in immediate danger, especially given contextual cues that were simply not there.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yes, that there are many, many unfavorable comparisons of that show we could make.
But, well, I'll just make the one comparison. That is shit and this is good. There you go, job done. Call it a night, folks. Off we go.
Hey, that's it. Wrap it up. You know, I had a point and I can't remember what I was going to say. So,
I'm so sorry. That's my bad.
No. It was in response to something you said. It wasn't like that you... I mean, it's my crap dad brain. Like, I literally just had it a minute ago to something you were talking about. The characters being vulnerable and... Skipper dying. I don't know. Maybe it'll come to me. Maybe it'll come to me later. But I think that's our talking points run through, unless you have any more.
No, other than that, if you've not already watched this show, fucking watch it.
Yeah, we spoiled it for you at this point. But
I mean we have spoiled it, but like, two episodes in, so that's one of the nice things about this fall. we can say at this point you should be watching this.
Yes, I think it's like, yes, we can make that call now. This is a must watch.
Admittedly, you do end up having to give money to Jeff Bezos, which is a bit of a problem. So, yeah.
Or you could not.
We'll save that discussion for another time, because that's its whole own kettle of banana fish. Do you see what I did there?
Fuck.
That was good.
I enjoyed that.
You look like you actually just had a cramp, to be honest.
Oh, boy. It's time for ratings, though. Woo! Ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings. Bing. Would you like me to go first, or would you like to go first?
I'll fire it out there right now. For me, this was 4 out of 5 improvised poll votes.
Nice. Very good. Very good. So for me, I will say that I give this episode, he says, stalling to try to think of an object to use in place of a star. Four and a half. I think that's flipped. It looks like a half and then 4, but 4.5. Duck Kings out of 5.
Nicely done.
I loved this episode. It was better than the first, even. It built on everything the first did.
That's what a good second episode should do, though.
Like, yes.
Foundation laid, and now we're building. And that's what wants me. That's what makes me want to come back next week.
Absolutely. It was so exciting. Now let's check in on the
Twitter poll.
I did put them on my own Twitter feed as opposed to the wired dash one, because I didn't have the details handy.
Oh, no. Okay, well, we'll figure that out. So, Twitter poll from last time. Were you a fan of the pacing of Banana Fish Episode 1? You can tweet at Watery Dash Show and vote, or you could have voted last week. And 70...
You can still travel back in time.
Well, you know what? Yes. That is not sanctioned by the FDA yet, so please be careful. Do it at your own risk. 72% say yes, they were a fan of the pacing, but 28% were not. And part of me wonders if I ask that again this week, how that would split out. But we're going to try to keep things fresh. And right now, if you go to @Shadon1010, you can vote on a couple different polls. Who has the better jacket, Kaiji from Kaiji or AG from Banana Fish? Right
you
now,
you have no idea how tempted I was to write AG from AG. I nearly did it. I nearly did it. It was so dumb.
Like... Why does it make me laugh? right now, recency bias is king, and AG is winning, but it's early days. And also, were you surprised that they died in episode 2? So far, only a few votes, but it's 100% yes. I guess it's everyone who didn't read the manga is voting there. But please go to Shadon's Twitter. I will have the main Watery Dash Show Twitter retweet those out for your voting pleasure. But that's going to do it. I think this week we've set our piece for Banana Fish Episode 2. So if you want to hang out with me, talk at me about Banana Fish, anime, Future Funk, politics, whatever. I'm at The Subtle Doctor on Twitter. Hit me up.
You can find me at Shaden1010, 1010 on Twitter. Just one quick thing I want to throw out there as well, just in general, which is that recently we passed 300 followers on Twitter, and we're very close to 200 on YouTube. So to everyone who has followed us, both on YouTube or on Twitter, from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much for taking the time to join us and listen to us week on week, month on month, whenever you might want to join us, wherever you might want to join us. Always a pleasure to have your company and your time. and we'll continue to make content that you enjoy as much as we can, as well as we can, with a couple of goofs here and there, because that's how we roll. But seriously, thank you. It means a lot.
What he said, 100%. Like, thank you. We just passed 100 followers on SoundCloud as well.
The 3-2-1.
Exactly, exactly. That, it's a weird relationship how, like, the plays that some of our episodes get on SoundCloud, I mean, this is going to sound like I'm bragging, but, you know, they're in the hundreds and hundreds, and yet we just now passed 100 followers, so this is how SoundCloud works. I just froze for a minute there, but now I'm unfrozen. Anyway, that's what I get for bragging about our fucking followers. But basically, this is just me saying.
Oh,
and like,
now I've got to 300, haven't you? Because someone said, like, oh, I'll follow and I'll
ruin their day. No, I'm very, very, like, appreciative of our audience.
Speaking of which, special shouts to Kay. Thank you so much for offering your insights on this episode today.
For sure, man.
And you will indeed see us next week.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And Grizz, my boy, Monocle Grizzly on Twitter. A long time we have followed each other, and I appreciate him hanging out with us as well this afternoon. But I guess I will shut us down and just say, hey, for Shadon, I'm the Subtle Doctor. Until next time, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe. Good night.
Good night.